from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Further developments in the case of the movie that wasn't, or might be, despite the fact that this year has been a bad one for movie theaters, with attendance down from last year, it appears that a movie about North Korea, not exactly a big box office draw, may be released after all. Reports Tuesday were that two theaters, one in Atlanta and another in Austin, would be showing the film over the holidays. We have this from RT's Marina Portnaya.
North Korea making a new threat against the United States.
The North Korean military cyber soldiers.
In a few short years, a member of the so-called Axis of Evil has become the axis of mainstream media attention.
Last week, Rodman hanging out and partying with the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
From basketball stars to a satirical Hollywood movie.
You want us to kill the leader of North Korea?
Yes.
What?
Freedom!
Over the past 3 years, the American public has been forced to become familiar with North Korea and its 31-year-old leader. Even when there's no news to report, some media outlets have proceeded to make up stories about America's adversary.
Dictator Kim Jong-un reportedly had an ex-girlfriend executed by firing squad.
Yeah, that turned out to be untrue. And then there was this.
A Chinese newspaper says the uncle of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un was eaten alive by a pack of ravenous dogs during his execution last year.
Kim's uncle was executed for stealing government funds, but no dogs were involved. The widely reported story came from a Chinese satirist who was poking fun at the notorious North Korean leader on social media. And then, of course, this month has seen a major spike in North Korea-related news.
U.S. officials say they have proof North Korea is behind that Sony hack attack.
Pyongyang denied involvement in what it called a righteous hack on Sony Pictures.
The biggest corporate cyber attack in history ultimately caused Sony to cave in to cyber terrorists and not release The Interview, a satirical movie about a fictional plot to assassinate North Korea's leader. But have no fear, an adult film studio is keeping the spotlight on Kim, announcing plans to produce a pornographic parody of The Interview. Gamers, too, can get up close with Kim Jong-un. A video game is in the works that pits the North Korean leader against the so-called imperialist armies. $9,000 has been contributed so far to get the concept up and running. Meanwhile, the U.S. has vowed to hit back against the attack on Sony.
They caused a lot of damage, and we will respond. We will respond proportionally, and we'll respond in a place and time and manner that we choose.
As jokes and rumors about North Korea swirl through the media, it may be that the very real threat of U.S. retaliation is being kept out of sight and mind. Marina Portnaya, RT.
Meanwhile, the real drama appeared to be playing out at the U.N. Security Council Monday, with the U.S. and its allies attempting to bring the North Korean government up on human rights charges. Stephanie Castro reports from the United Nations.
The Security Council has been urged to take action to ensure that individuals and institutions in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, DPRK, account for alleged international crimes they have committed. That's what the UN Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, Ivan Simonovic, said as the council met for the first time to discuss DPRK outside of the nuclear non-proliferation issue. He said the crimes identified in the report by the UN Human Rights Council's Commission of Inquiry include extermination, murder, enslavement, torture, sexual violence, political violence, abductions, and deliberate starvation. Mr. Simonovic described the report as an extensive charge sheet of international crimes that has been brought to the Council's attention.
For the first time, a UN-mandated body has qualified human rights violations in the DPRK in terms of international criminal law. This is significant in establishing individual and institutional accountability, but it also invokes the international community's responsibility to take action to prevent and punish such crimes.
Mr. Simonovic said that an overwhelming majority of member states in the UN Human Rights Council and the General Assembly, as well as victims, survivors, and civil society organizations around the world, have asked the Security Council to take action on the report. It includes referral of North Korea to the International Criminal Court and an adoption of targeted sanctions, he added. Stephanie Castro, United Nations.
But not everyone was on board with the U.S. effort. Two of the Council's permanent members, China and the Russian Federation, called the effort extraordinary and a diversion of the Council's attention from the many serious matters before it. We have this report from the Chinese news agency, CCTV.
The United Nations Security Council has held a meeting on the human rights issue of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. China urges the Council to refrain from doing anything that might cause the escalation of tensions on the Korean Peninsula and stresses differences should be resolved through constructive dialogue and cooperation.
Mr. President, China has stated its position against the Council's involvement of the human rights issues in the DPRK. China has been consistently against politicization of human rights issues and against imposing pressure against other countries with the pretext of human rights issues. The Security Council is not the forum to discuss human rights issues. We oppose adoption of any outcome document by the Council on the human rights situation in the DPRK. China is a close neighbor of the Korean Peninsula. We will never allow any turbulence or war taking place in the peninsula. At present, the situation in the Korean Peninsula remains complex and sensitive. We hope that members of the Council and relevant parties place the overall interest of denuclearization and the maintenance of peace and stability of the Korean Peninsula as a priority. Exercise restraint, and do more that are conducive to the easing of tension, avoid mutual provocation, and refrain from any rhetoric and actions that may lead to the escalation of tension. China will continue to work for the realization of a denuclearized peninsula, maintain its peace and stability, and address issues through dialogue and consultation. This position is clear and firm. China hopes that the relevant parties will make concerted effort to take real actions to create conditions for the relaunch of the six-party talk, with a view to jointly maintaining the overall situation of peace and stability of the peninsula. Thank you, Mr. President.
The DPRK's representative did not participate in Monday's meeting. The country's UN envoy, Kim Song, denounced the move and accused the U.S. of raising the issue as a political weapon to pressure the DPRK. He rejected the idea of dialogue or a visit to the DPRK by a UN human rights investigator. Kim said a decision on how to respond to the Council decision would be made in Pyongyang.
The position of China was echoed by the representative of the Russian Federation.
Thank you, Mr. President. We were against the initiative of convening today's meeting. We consider that it could lead to negative consequences from the point of view of upholding the effectiveness of the Security Council and other UN system bodies. The Council is often criticized that it increasingly spends its time on matters not within its remit. Today we provided yet more grounds for such criticism. Issues of respect for human rights should be considered not here, but at the Human Rights Council, the body which, with the active participation of many Security Council members, was created specially to discuss this issue and has been granted with the necessary authority and expertise to do just this. And finally, it's quite superfluous to even mention that today's discussion is unlikely to promote international dialogue with DPRK participation on this issue, which the authorities of this country had earlier stated to be ready for. Thank you.
Cuba says it will not extradite a U.S. fugitive who has taken refuge in the Caribbean island, despite the recent announcement that diplomatic relations with Washington will be restored for the first time since 1961. Cuba's head of North American Affairs, Josefina Vidal, said Monday that Havana has no intention of extraditing Assad Shakur since there is, quote, no extradition treaty in effect between Cuba and the U.S., closed quote. She noted that, although anything can be discussed between the two countries as they move to reestablish ties, quote, every nation has sovereign and legitimate rights to grant political asylum to people it considers to have been persecuted, closed quote. We will continue to follow this story as it develops. Late Friday, a federal judge dismissed a civil claim filed against former President George W. Bush and other high-ranking officials regarding their conduct in planning and waging the Iraq War. The case alleged that the former president, former Vice President Richard Cheney, former Secretary of State Colin Powell, and Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, and Paul Wolfowitz committed aggression in the planning and waging of the Iraq War. Specifically, the suit claimed that high-ranking Bush officials used the fear of 9/11 to mislead the American public into supporting a war against Iraq, and that they issued false statements that Iraq was in league with Al-Qaeda and had weapons of mass destruction, while knowing that none of these things were true. U.S. District Court Judge John S. Teeger, an Obama appointee in the Northern District of California, ruled that the defendants were shielded by the Westfall Act, a federal law that immunizes any government official from civil lawsuits if that official was acting, quote, within the scope of his office or employment, closed quote, regardless of the truth of the allegations made in the complaint. The plaintiff's attorney, Inder Komar, said the suit was, quote, a serious attempt to hold U.S. leaders accountable under laws set down at the Nuremberg trials in 1946, closed quote. The tribunal at Nuremberg, established in large part by the United States after World War II, declared international aggression the, quote, supreme international crime, closed quote, and convicted, imprisoned, and executed German leaders for waging illegal war. In last Friday's decision, Judge Teeger concluded that, because U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder had issued a certification that Bush, Cheney, et al. Were acting within the scope of their federal office or employment at the time the acts were committed, the court had no authority to review the case. The court's ruling comes in the wake of the Senate report regarding the use of torture by the CIA during the Bush administration. That Senate report confirmed that a false confession obtained from the torture of one of the detainees was cited by the administration in support of the war. On Monday, Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm announced that a former Milwaukee police officer, Christopher Manny, who was white, would not face charges in the fatal shooting of Dontre Hamilton, a black man, in a city park earlier this year. Chisholm said the officer was justified on April 30th when he fired 13 shots at Hamilton, who the prosecutor said had grabbed the officer's baton and swung it at him.
John, did Officer Manny do everything right? Did he handle this in a model way?
I would never say that any officer, much less any prosecutor, defense attorney, judge, nobody ever does everything right. That's not the standard that anybody is held to. What the standard they're held to is that, given the facts and circumstances, they behave as objectively reasonable as they can behave in that circumstance. So simply all I'm saying is that from the legal standpoint of assessing whether or not under these facts and circumstances he was confronted with a situation that posed the real threat of death or great bodily harm, and was he justified in using force in this circumstance, and was the amount of force appropriate, my conclusion is yes.
Nate Hamilton is the brother of Dontre Hamilton. He spoke outside the courthouse in Milwaukee after the announcement.
My family, we cried too long. As a people, yes, we're done crying.
Yes, sir.
When injustice comes, we're not gonna cover up injustice with our tears. We're not gonna be, you know, laid back and stay sheltered from justice. We deserve justice. Justice is our right.
Yes.
You know, my family, you know, I love my family. I love my brother. So, you know, this is a fight that we are gonna endure.
Yes, sir.
We're gonna stay strong.
Yes, sir.
We're not gonna waver.
Sure.
We're not gonna let it pass. We're not gonna turn our backs no more. That's what they're waiting for us to turn our backs, for us to not look, for us not to see what's really going on. So we must wake the people up.
Yes, sir.
We must show them that injustice does exist. but no longer will we cry. My family, we won't cry. So, you know, the federal government, you know, they know that justice has to come to the people. Why can't justice come to the people? Do we not deserve to be treated right? Are we the people that not build this community, this city? We sweat. We sweat every day at work. But then come home to be treated like pets to the system. We as people can control our own destiny. The people have the power already.
Yes, sir.
So on today, we activating the power of the people. So the power of the people will not be deactivated until justice is consistent.
That's right.
We will stand. We will fight. My family loves you all the supporters. We gonna maintain. And on April 30th, we took a 31-year-old's life. He massacred my brother.
Yes, sir.
He stood there and looked at him. He sized him up, and he killed him with hate. He killed him with intent. And now he has the mental problem. He been had the mental problem. The whole system has a mental problem. And no longer will we have a mental problem of depression. We won't sit here and have anger. We will turn that into positive energy. We'll release that upon this beast. This is a beast.
That's right.
And only the people can take down the beast. So on today, we activating the power of the people. All people, far and wide, come out. Let's stand together. Let's unite. We don't have to be that voice of reason. My family doesn't have to be that voice of reason to come out and say no violence. We don't. You know who has to be that voice of reason? The mayor has to be that voice of reason. The police chief has to be that voice of reason. The district attorney has to be the voice of reason. Not my family. Not any family that has to go through an injustice. Do we have to tell the people to calm? The people has been calm. The people has not stood up.
Come on, Nate.
So when will we stand up? We have to stand up. Activate the power of the people.
That's right.
In the aftermath of Saturday's killing of two New York City police officers, there's been a concerted public relations effort by the New York PBA to place the blame on protesters. But at least one media outlet has been caught actually altering the chants of protesters on tape to make it appear they were calling for the killing of police. Tawanda Jones was one of the protesters leading the chant. Her brother, Tyrone West, 44, died on July 18, 2013, after being pulled over while driving through Northeast Baltimore. According to West's family and based on witness accounts, he was beaten to death by the officers. The medical examiner's office ruled that he died because of a pre-existing heart condition exacerbated by the struggle with police and the summer heat. Her family has been holding weekly protests ever since. Jones was shocked to learn that footage of one of the protests had been altered by the Fox station to make it sound as if she was calling for the killing of police. After being confronted over their newscast, Baltimore Fox affiliate WBFF admitted that they edited the tape so that the chant, quote, "We won't stop, we can't stop till killer cops are in cell blocks," closed quote, sounded as if protesters were chanting, "Kill a cop." Along with altering the audio, WBFF told the audience that protesters were chanting, "We won't stop, we can't stop, so kill a cop." Meanwhile, a day after New York's Mayor Bill de Blasio called on protesters in New York to suspend their activities until after the funerals of the two NYPD officers are completed, organizers of a protest scheduled for Tuesday insisted they would continue their efforts. Brian Becker is a coordinator with the Answer Coalition. We spoke with him by Skype Tuesday.
Mayor de Blasio capitulating to pressure from the PBA, the Police Association, and other ultra-right-wing and I would say semi-fascist forces in New York City, his capitulation to them is saying that the murder of the police officers in Brooklyn over the weekend should be the reason for the civil rights movement, this broad nationwide movement that's included hundreds of thousands of people protesting against the epidemic of police murder, that movement should come to an end. And he called for us and other groups to suspend our protests. And we're going forward today. The idea is to have a mass protest on Fifth Avenue on the busiest shopping day of the year to make the point that the police murders that are going on every 28 hours, a black person is killed in the United States by a police officer or a security guard or a vigilante, that, and with impunity, that this is no longer tolerable, and we're going to continue to protest. The mayor is trying to intimidate the movement. The police are certainly trying to intimidate the mayor and the movement. The mayor thus becomes the conduit for police pressure against the movement that's protesting against police misconduct, abuse, violence, murder, etc. But we're going forward. We urge everyone to join us today at 5 p.m. at 59th Street and 5th Avenue. This protest, like all the other protests, will be peaceful. It'll be an exercise of free speech rights. It's an exercise of that which the Constitution guarantees, in spite of the fact that the mayor is trying to suspend those rights and the police definitely want us to suspend those rights. So we're going forward. There's no connection at all between the broad movement that's, as I said, has included hundreds of thousands of people in the streets, not just in New York, but around the country, with the killing of two police officers in Brooklyn by a man who had shot his girlfriend the day before and then, according to the report, committed suicide. We don't know all the details. But there's no connection between what happened there and the protest movement and the attempt to smear the movement, to intimidate the movement. That just must be rejected by all of us who are trying to struggle for justice in the United States.
You know, I was speaking yesterday with Caleb Maupin, it was actually. He pointed out that the largest public relations budget of any police department in the United States is the police department budget, the public relations budget of NYPD. And I noticed that it was last week on Friday, before the two police officers in New York were shot and killed, that the effort, the PR effort from NYPD had already begun. They had started a slogan of "Thank You NYPD." They called a rally that was under that slogan, and "We Can Breathe Because of NYPD." How much of the effort to dissipate the protests, which are, if they haven't reached the point of being a movement already, certainly are reaching that point, how much of that effort do you think has been part of the program since before these two officers were killed, and is now simply just that they're taking advantage of that?
Right. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we have different elements sort of in congruence here. You have the NYPD itself, which of course answers to the mayor, and as we know, in New York City, with tens of thousands of police, larger than most countries' armies, they answer to themselves as well. They are constantly on an NYPD promotion tour to create a narrative that goes against what the masses of people, in especially in Black and Latino communities, are experiencing, which is a terror and intimidation by the cops. That's at one level. Then you have the Police Benevolence Association, which is attacking the NYPD management, including the mayor, and saying that the blood of the officers is on the mayor, is in the mayor's office, and attacking the NYPD senior management like Breton. And they themselves constitute another force inside of New York City politics. Let's not forget that in 1992, 10,000 police officers descended on City Hall to protest David Dinkins' creation of a civilian review board. And Mayor Rudy Giuliani egged them on, mayoral candidate, he was then a candidate, egged them on. And thousands of them stormed the Brooklyn Bridge. They punched reporters. They drank openly in the streets. In other words, they were carrying out armed demonstrations.
Right.
And the same organization, like when Remarlee Graham, an unarmed Black teenager, was executed by a police officer, the same people who bring out the rank and file cops, some of them at least, to applaud when that officer was granted bail. In other words, they're constantly saluting and supporting the executioners of unarmed people, especially in Black communities. Mm. Eric Garner, Sean Bell, Remarlee Graham, just to name a few.
Right.
So we have the police, the NYPD, and then the PBA and the other police associations, so-called unions, but who really function as ultra-right-wing associations that always defend police killings. And they're another force here that's, you know, putting pressure on the NYPD management and on de Blasio, who, as I said in the beginning, de Blasio, in spite of his liberal background, is capitulating and demanding that the social justice movement stop protesting because police officers were killed. I mean, how many individuals have been killed by the police and no mayor, not Mayor de Blasio or anyone else, has made such a demand that there should be a chill on free speech rights? And that's exactly what you have when the mayor of a city in charge of a police force of tens of thousands tells people who have been peacefully protesting, stop protesting because two police officers were killed by a random individual.
Yeah, he couched it in terms of like personal sympathy, like an expression of, I guess, collective personal sympathy that, you know, the primary thing to be concerned about here are the feelings of the families of the police officers who were killed. And, you know, there have been a number of funerals, the Garner family's funeral, the Remarlee Graham's family's funeral. You know, all these other families have had the same trauma, you know, the loved one killed. And you don't see the same call from de Blasio or any of these other officials for somehow the whole world to stop and everyone to reach out to these families and support them. Why the double standard?
Well, you're seeing this sort of process play out in New York and elsewhere, that the lives of police officers are actually more important and more valued than the lives of anyone else in any community. And you have to think about that. And also, we have to ask ourselves the question and answer the question, why is it that when there's this epidemic of police murder, as I said, every 28 hours, a Black person is being killed by police or security guards or vigilantes, why isn't the government or the so-called, let's say, ruling class in the United States, the real powers that be, Wall Street and the government apparatus and the federal authorities, why don't they stop it? Why don't they make some examples out of some cops who are routinely executing unarmed people in America? And I think the reason for that is that this is really the system that the ruling class prefers. They have impunity to the police, who then act as an occupation army in oppressed communities and working class communities, and who have a license to kill. And I think that we have to see that the police force is given impunity because they are a fundamental element of social control. In other words, it's a tool of organized violence against a class. This is an extension of class oppression.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.